Hello there, this is Mark, your fat friend from the Fat and Black Connection, and I'm here to tell you about Anchor. If you haven't heard about it, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First of all, it's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Do me a favor and go download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started on your very own. Good day, everyone. I am Mark, your fat friend.
And I'm James, your black friend.
And this is the Fat and Black Connection,
where we talk about anything and everything. Well, as long as it's interesting to us, of course.
Yes, and today's episode is a very special episode. You know, I think for today, I will be going by the name of Harry or Hair Dog. And James, I think you should be going by Smokey.
Yeah, we can do throwback nicknames.
Yeah, I obviously today's episode, we're going to be primarily focusing on a gentleman that we both were and are quite fond of. Mr. Stephen Harrington, also known as H, passed away last year.
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought that was in 20. Yeah. So,
and, they are doing a memorial, a life service for him this weekend in Colorado. And unfortunately, you know, both of us, you know, can't make that, that travel. And so we thought in our own way, this would be a good way for us to utilize what we do and what we have to try and at least remember him. And So first and foremost, I received an email from one of H's son-in-laws asking a question around nicknames that H used to throw out. You know, obviously Marky Mark, that was a quick and easy one. How about for you, James? Did H have, what kind of names did H call you?
Oh man. I think a couple times he threw out books of the Bible.
Calling you Titus?
No, when I said, because I would use my middle name, so he'd be like, James DeVroe, row, row your boat, stuff. so just like, it was just random. I can't even, man, it's just so many different things. I mean, I spent, kind of jump right into it. I spent number of Saturdays with that man. So I had a tendency to be late to class. And so.
Yeah, you had a lot of attendance issues.
No, not attendance issues. I was there. It was just not on time. So
tardiness. Tardiness is not an attendance issue.
No, it's that because I was there. I'm just saying.
Okay, fair. So, okay, let's back up a little bit and let's first give our stories each of how we met or came to know H. How about that?
All right. Yours, well, I guess since I ended, well, you knew him first. You met him first before I did. So
that's true. I did.
Cause you worked with him in the children's theater. So
that's true. I did. So I was friends with, a gentleman named Will. We were best friends from, you know, probably third grade for a really long time. And Will was very involved in Newark Children's Theater. I can't remember what the program was actually called. But he did, you know, a Batman show where Brandon Harrington, H's son, was Batman and Will was Robin. And they did a lot of shows where it was, you know, if we were looking at them today, they would be called parodies or mockumentaries, things of that nature, where H would take
an existing concept and spin it on its head. And so, you know, Will used to tell me about these shows that he was a part of, and I always thought it was interesting, but it wasn't really my thing yet. And I remember being in junior high at Newark Junior High School, and they had posted auditions for Godspell at Newark Memorial, and junior hires were allowed to audition, but it was pretty rare that a junior hire would get in. And I had heard of Godspell, and I had heard some of the songs from Godspell, and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go and audition. And I went, and I auditioned, and it was scary because I was the only one there that I knew, and I'm sure I did a terrible job because, needless to say, I didn't get cast or anything, which was not terribly surprising. However, I was told, hey, there's this children's program, you know, that is through junior high, the end of junior high, and you should come audition for the show we've got coming up this summer called The Wizard of Odd. And so obviously a play on Wizard of Oz. And I decided to go. Will was auditioning, so him and I went together, and we auditioned for the show. We both got in. I got cast originally as the very sick toad. Follow the very sick toad. Follow the very sick toad.
Wow.
Yes, oh, the mind of a genius, Stephen Harrington was. So as the show progressed, Will was actually cast as the Scarecrow instead of the Scarecrow. And needless to say, I think he had some bad grades, and his grandmother pulled him from the show kind of as a punishment. So the part was open, and H did auditions for that part, and I ended up getting the Scarecrow. And, you know, I remember meeting H at the Godspell auditions, and it was very brief. I didn't get a whole lot. I didn't get a whole lot of interaction with him. It was him. It was very like, boom, boom, do this, do that, go, go, boom, boom, boom. Right. And again, I think I was in seventh or eighth grade when
that's a lot coming. That's a lot coming at you at like 13 years old.
Yes.
Cause it was a lot coming at me at 14. So yeah.
So needless to say, like I said, I'm sure I bombed my audition. I don't remember at this point, but I just remember thinking, man, this guy is like overwhelming. And so then when I went to do the audition for Wizard of Oz, which was not a musical, it was a play. And so I didn't have to sing, and I could sing, but I was always nervous singing in front of people. And so I remember at that audition, it was the same thing. He was like, boom, do this, do this. Hey, you know, there was like some improv to the audition, and it was still overwhelming. And so to get cast as a part, even though it was a very small part originally as the very sick toad, it was cool. It was like, wow, I guess, you know, I can do this theater thing. And then to get bumped up into the Scarecrow, where I went from having, you know, maybe 5 to 10 lines, I now all of a sudden have, you know, 30-ish.
Pretty big part.
Yeah, it was a decent sized part. But I remember working on that with H, and I could tell at that young age that this person was passionate about what they were doing. And I think for me, up until getting involved in theater in high school and vicariously through doing The Wizard of Oz, I don't think I had ever really been passionate about much. You know, I had done Sea Scouts and I enjoyed it, but I was never really passionate about it. I played baseball and I enjoyed it, but I was never really passionate about it. And seeing this person clearly loving what they were doing, I think it made a huge impact on me, even to who I am today. And I do remember during that show in specific, and as something I'm sure we'll talk about throughout this episode, is the H blow up, which.
Wow. Yeah.
There always seemed to be at least one, but usually it was just one at some point during the production where he just lost his mind. And cussing would happen and yelling, screaming, things might get thrown. He never hit a kid. He never threw anything at a kid. He never cussed directly at the kid, but you could hear him up in the sound room, in the sound booth, you know, F this, whatever. So I very distinctly remember that. And it wasn't at me. I don't think there was ever one that was just directly at me, luckily. But I remember it happening. I remember like, oh my God, what did we do? Like, you know, here I am a little, you know, 13-year-old or so. And this is the summer between junior high and high school. And in my head, I'm about to come to this school where this guy is to theoretically do theater more because I'm enjoying this experience. And
Oh no.
So, yeah, that was my first time really working with and getting to know H. And before we hear your story, we do have a couple comments. You know, Brian, our dam, calls out that H's nicknames were often much longer than real names, which absolutely is true. He would take your name and just find ways to stretch that sucker out. You know, as you said, Dev row, row, row your boat, right?
Yeah.
And Steven calls out, I'm super bummed that he can't be in Colorado for H, but he will be watching the live stream. So, you know, I definitely plan to be doing that myself. I'm hoping we can get the link. If not, you know, right now, that we can at least get it up on our page later for other people to be able. And obviously, folks, if you're listening, watching live right now, please share your thoughts on H if you have them. We'll be happy to read them. You know, if you've got stories, type them out, send them, and we'll call them out throughout the episode as we have time. So so that was my story of first meeting H. Let's hear yours, James.
So yeah, pretty much my first true interaction with this man was actually not for a minute, because most of my interactions at the beginning when I got to high school, I didn't really know theater. I ended up meeting a guy in my Spanish class who did theater, and so, you know, he invited me to hang out with him and stuff like that. So we'd hang out in the infamous theater hallway for lunches and stuff like that. And so most of my first interactions were with Barb Williams. Love that woman, like, still to this day. She was a great, and so H was, because I think she was working on The Crucible at that time, so H was doing a lot of the tech work. And so I didn't really see him as much, because, I mean, literally, if you were trying to find him, if you did not pin him down and ask him what you needed to ask him right then and there, it was damn near impossible, because he was quick, and he wasn't a small dude, but he, like, if you could turn your head real quick to say, like, hold on a second, turn back around, the dude would be gone. Like, and I believe my first interaction with him was I needed to get the key for the bathroom in the drama hallway. And yeah, trying to pin him down to just get that damn key for that bathroom was a whole nother story. But that was my first that was kind of my first quick interaction with them.
And bear in mind, the only locked bathrooms on campus.
Right. But they were also like the nicest and cleanest. So mm-hmm. You really got so that's why we like using that one. When I really, one of my big first interaction with him was, I was asking him about the football games, because he used to do the announcing for the football games. And at my freshman year, I went to every home game with my dad. And so he was like, I was talking to him about that. And he was like, hey, you know, would you mind spotting for me? And if you don't know what spotting is, basically I'd be up in the booth and, you know, I'd give him the numbers of, you know, who tackled who, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I did that. I did that for, you know, a good portion of the season. So any home games, I'd be up in the booth with H, and that was a whole, I mean, we had so much fun. We'd actually tried to, I remember I think it was after school, me and him met up. And we've been talking about how we wanted to, you know, add sound effects to the game. And so we sat down and played Madden with a mic, you know, with a microphone and a tape set. Yeah, I mean, like, we're talking, this is like, you know, pre the cell phones we have now. So you couldn't just record stuff like right on a whim. Like you had to, it was a setup. And I mean, I posted this after he passed and as a fun memory that I had of him. And I mean, we sat there for a number of hours just trying to get the, you know, messing with the sound and turning it up, turning it down and turning the volume on the TV, just trying to get, you know, and like just, you know, hitting each other, we were playing Madden. So, you know, just hitting each other, trying to get those sound effects and everything. And, you know, like I said, unfortunately it didn't work. But just spending that time with him and really getting to know his personality and how he was, like you said, he was so passionate. He was passionate not only about theater, but he was passionate about us. I was just some random kid who just, I wasn't doing theater. I just happened to be there. I would go to the games and I'd hear him, and I knew him from, you know, the hallway, whatever. He didn't have to, you know, he could have been like, you know, nah, let's, you know, we can do something else or whatever. But he didn't care about that. He really just wanted to try and always put out the best product that he could, no matter what. Like, it was always about what was going out. And so my first true interaction was like this man who, like I said, he didn't really know me, but he took that time out and was like, hey, let's try and make this even bigger than what it already is. And so for that, I will always remember that about him, that it didn't matter who you were. If you came to do work, he was all about it. He was all about it.
Yeah, I agree. And a couple comments from some of our listeners, viewers. Debbie says, I was always so impressed at his recall of numbers. He could look at anyone who had graduated and tell you exactly what year they graduated. Not sure he remembered the names, but he never forgot the years. And that's absolutely true. I mean, I remember, you know, hanging out in his classroom, and, you know, an alumni would come popping in, whoever, and he'd be like, oh, there's Jimmy, class of 97 or whatever. And, you know, it was, and he'd be right. You know, he might not remember the full name, or he might not even, but, you know, as Debbie said, like, he definitely remembered the year. Oh, class of 01 in the house, you know?
Yeah.
And then Steven says, the day after an H blow up is one of my fondest memories. He was never hesitant to take blame or even hold himself accountable. He would apologize for his actions or what he said during the blow up and would give pointers on how we could improve. The show must go on. I will always hold those memories of his passion and accountability dear to my heart.
Yes, the blow ups were also, yes, he was famous for the blow ups. But that man was also famous for falling. Especially when he was filming. Now, mind you, some of those were scary as hell.
Falling from the stage into the pit.
That man would, I mean, because he'd have the and this again, we didn't have the cell phone cameras, and even if we did, they would have been garbage. So I mean, we're talking about handheld camcorders, you know, and he was, I mean, and this wasn't like a multi-camera shoot. This was this man holding
one man on stage walking around.
just in your face, just like he if he's getting a close up, he's like getting a close up.
He didn't use the zoom function. He'll
be in your eye, and yeah. Those were because it's almost. I remember watching some of the filming when it was going on. And it was like, what is he doing? Like, because at that time too, it didn't have a power pack, or either right. that, or it was old.
He was usually corded.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was corded in, and so like, man, and like, you know, he'd be backing up, and then all of a sudden, like you see it just whoop, the camera would just, and you're like, oh no, like it was just like. Oh man.
And you would think for somebody that had worked on that stage for as long as they did, they would know intimately, okay, I've got three more steps I can take before I fall. But
right.
I think he was so into the moment that.
Right. And that's the thing is that he's recording this thing, but he's being drawn in, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I remember because the times too, we would, and you know what I think maybe would have thrown it off too, Mark, is that we would change the stage depending on the show. We would add the mm-hmm. rakes and stuff like that. So, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he fell into the pit. I know of at least two. And it was just.
And that's just during the time we worked with him. I mean, right. The guy was working before. In that theater for many years before us and many years after us.
Oh yeah, no, at least a few, and it wasn't many. It wasn't a whole lot of years after us because he retired not too long after 01, right?
I think he retired in 2010.
Was it 2010?
I think so. Oh, if anybody is out there and can confirm or deny, but I think it was somewhere around 2010.
Yeah, no, but I mean, yeah. So I mean, but like, it was just it was almost like, how are you still alive right now? Because that's like, and he would get up, he'd be dazed about it, but he'd
dust himself off and go again.
Let's go again, man. I was just like, bro, like what? Chill for a minute, man. take a chill pill. But no, one of the things that I was,
and he never earlier, wanted us to stop. He never wanted.
Oh like, no, keep going. Like
keep doing. Oh, keep bro, going.
You just fell. Like you can't just keep going. You know, I mean, at least we had empathy, you know, we were concerned mm-hmm. about him. But one of the things I was going to say earlier, is that I spent quite a number of Saturdays with this guy, mm-hmm. because in order, I ended up cutting a deal with the vice principal, I'll do a number of Saturdays to not
Saturday detention,
Saturday detentions. To not be suspended. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And so those Saturdays, most of them, not all of them, most of them were with H. And so in the morning, we'd all, you know, it'd be, depending on how many hours you had to be there. Me, unfortunately, it was like all day. But like, depending on the time, we would start off in the cafeteria. And then we would move over to our black box theater over there, which if you did theater, you know that room, because it was either a changing room or a hangout room or whatever. It was just always something going on.
H's English English or classes.
Yeah, I never took English with him or Barb, but you know, I did his like his improv classes and stuff like that. Which we also did on the stage too, but that's another stuff. But especially like when a show was going on, we'd be in the theater. And so we'd have rehearsals. We'd have like some smaller rehearsals on Saturdays and stuff like that. So it was cool seeing that. But then you also, the man was nonstop. He was building. He was helping get lights set. He was doing like everything that could possibly be done on these Saturdays. And it was like, almost like, I was like, man, like you have all these kids in here. I'm sure you could have put us to work, but he didn't. I mean, and then like, you know, once I was there, you know, I would actually offer, you know, hey, what else, you know, can I do anything because I'm here and I'm here like all day. So, you know, and that's, so I got to, you know, so there was some, you know, not a whole lot of building, but like, you know, I'd screw, cut, do some screws, whatever. But yeah, you're right. He retired in 2010. Debbie confirmed that for us. But no, I mean, it was just like, just watching this guy work was phenomenal. Like he truly, there's a lot of teachers that, you know, they care, they like their jobs, they care about their jobs. But he was so focused on that job to make sure what we were putting out was quality. He didn't just want to put up anything. It was quality. That's why he would have those blow-ups.
No, I agree. And
when things didn't go right, but quality, you know, that's what it was about.
It's interesting when I think back on my time doing, you know, the different shows and everything. And, you know, of course, in the moment, you feel like you're awesome, right? You feel like the show's amazing, right? And then you go and you watch, you know, as an adult now, I go and I watch a high school performance, you know, locally or something to try and be supportive. And it, some of them are really bad, right? And it makes me think, were we that bad? And I don't think we were. I think, because I go back and I look at photos, or I've, you know, over the years, I've gone back and seen some of the videos from the shows we've done. And I'm like, no, we were actually pretty good. Not, you know, obviously there were moments that weren't great. There were actors or whatever, or songs that maybe weren't as tight as they could have been. But I think that H and Barb as well, both put on quality. And to go along with that, you know, you mentioned H, you know, on spending time on the weekends there, and you know, especially from a technical aspect with the sets and the lighting, and you know, as you know, and maybe the audience doesn't though, still to this day, I do lighting design. I love to do lighting design for theater, and I'm pretty, I think, pretty darn good lighting designer. I've been hired to do professional stuff. I've been hired to do local, like travel type big shows. And I think I do a pretty good job, and I attribute that 100% to H. You know, I remember me and a friend of the show, Matt, we, also known as Peanut, we were both, you know, when we first got to high school, the first show I worked on wasn't even in my freshman year in high school. The first show I worked on was actually my sophomore year, and it was The Hostage, which was an H-directed play that I auditioned for, didn't get cast, but I was offered the opportunity to work on the technical side. And
that was, real quick, that was another thing that I really enjoyed about that theater program, because even if you did not get in that show, they were going to find something for you to do. Like
if you wanted to do something, if you wanted to be involved.
If you wanted to be involved, they will get you involved. Like I had no real, skill, you know, with a drill or anything like that. But, you know, they were like, here you go. I was like, what? And he was like, follow me. And put him here. All right, cool. And that's the thing, is that even if you didn't get cast, if you wanted to be a part of that show, you were going to be a part of it. They will get you into that show.
Yeah. So I remember working on The Hostage, and Matt and I, we were both interested in lighting. I don't remember why, but, you know, the opportunity was to work with H on lighting. And so we did, and I remember thinking, this guy's kind of insane. He would take a scene and put 5 to 10 lighting cues where really you maybe only needed one, maybe two. And I can remember working with H on lighting on pretty much every show at Memorial after that. I even went on to work on that as well. On lighting for stage one, very early. I mean, the first show I did was in when stage one was still in their old place. I helped with lighting on a children's production of Annie. And that was a lot of fun. And so the first, I don't know if you remember, but the first production stage one did at Newark Memorial when they did the full move over was H directed Fiddler on the Roof. And I got to do the lighting design for that show. And I remember that one even more so because I'm working with H and he's saying, I need more. I want more. And it's like, I've already got, I don't know, let's say 100 lighting cues. And he's like, no, there needs to be more. And I think on that show, by the end of getting everything programmed and ready to go, there was close to 300 lighting cues.
What?
Yeah. And
leave it to that man. Yeah.
And it looked amazing. It was a beautiful show. The lighting was beautiful. You know, he knew every aspect of how to do a show so well. It wasn't just a director. He knew how to design and build sets. He knew how to design and create the sound. He knew how to design and create the lighting. He knew how to publicize. He was the producer. He knew every single aspect there is to the theater. Mm-hmm. And I have worked on, at this point in my theatrical career, I've worked on almost 60 different productions. And still to this day, and this is, you know, I love Barb just as the same as you, but still to this day, there is no one that I have worked with that has had such a not just breadth of knowledge, but a depth of knowledge on the whole theater program. And somebody that has such a unique take on how to do a show. You know, you can do Godspell, right? But I remember going back to Memorial after I graduated and he was doing Godspell again, and it was after 9/11, and they did a set where, you know, it was clearly kind of somewhat of a post-apocalyptic feel, but each of the characters, rather than being, you know, an apostle, if you will, they were represented by wearing a country flag. And so it was supposed to be, the concept overall was unifying the world, right? And, you know, I worked on The Crucible with him up at Ohlone College. And again, The Crucible that he did up there, the dialogue is the same. The direction was not, you know, the stage direction was not anything, but the show felt so different than any other production or Crucible I'd ever seen or been involved with.
If you work with Fred Allum up at Ohlone, to name drop, that dude, once he figured out that you could use foam, that dude used foam for like
everything.
And it was like, so it was like rock formations, but in the rocks, we had these monitors from a show that we had done a number of years before. And so there was multimedia. It was so much stuff in that show that, like, somebody might have come up with it, but not as brilliantly as he did.
Yeah.
That's bottom line.
Absolutely. And really quick calling out, Stephen said, behind the scenes, away from the theater, H was an even better man and provided a loving home for his kids and adopted kids. I was lucky enough to be accepted into the family for a few summers in my teens. Stephen evidently was also a part of that version of Godspell that I saw. And Stephen says that it's still his favorite and most memorable show that he's been a part of. Godspell still to this day is there's a very close tie. One day one might be ahead of the other, and the next day the other is ahead of the other. But still to this day, Godspell is neck and neck with West Side Story for my two favorite musicals of all time. And unfortunately, I never got to do Godspell with H because first time I was in junior high, I didn't get cast, and the next time was after I was gone. And, luckily I got to work with H on West Side Story in a way. He didn't direct it, Barb directed it, but he was involved from the technical side. And, you know, I can say for me, the biggest connection I think that still to this day when I think of H is I think of when I played Johnny Casino in Greece.
Oh yeah, because you just wanted to get it. You didn't really care. You were like, I was going to be in.
Well, and so I was the assistant director on Grease. I had worked with H to be his assistant director, and so I got to work very closely with him. I mean, it was a lot of fun really getting into his mind and really understanding his process. And I remember when I auditioned for Grease, you know, I had already told him I wanted to be Johnny Casino. And the reason I wanted to be Johnny Casino is because the last time he did Grease, he was Johnny Casino. And I didn't want to be the character that's written in the script. I wanted to be H as Johnny Casino. And, but I remember at that audition, I actually did one of the Danny Zuko songs, and he talked to me after the auditions, and he was like, if you weren't the assistant director and you had taken this a lot more seriously, I probably would have cast you as Danny Zuko. And I remember thinking, well, damn, I guess I should take myself a little bit more seriously. And, and that is true, right? Don't go into an audition kind of, you know, half button it or whatever, you know, go full butt. And take yourself seriously. even if the people watching you don't take yourself seriously, take yourself seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when we did Grease and I got to be Johnny Casino, I don't know if you remember, but I was H. I watched the video from when he had done it, you know, 5, 6, 7 years prior, and he played Johnny Casino, and I watched that thing probably a dozen times at least, because I wanted to emulate him.
Full on embodiment. This yes. man, now if you do not know, this man was so enamored. I mean, he took mannerisms from that mannerisms. That's the word. Yeah, that right there. That was the one. He would do that constantly. And so it was just like, yeah, so I know he was definitely a big part to you. And like Steven said, yeah, I mean, just like you could, after H passed, and, you know, reading some of the posts, especially from guys that, you know, people, you know, and you go back and you read, like, you know, like, it maybe wasn't a great home. And so, like, you know, he invites you, you know, you could come over and hang out, and, you know, you would end up staying for dinner and stuff like that. And it was just like, and then, you know, and then you meet his, and you know, fortunately, like, for me, I was there, like, I got to, you know, I met his son, and by far one of the funniest dudes I've ever met. One of the nicest. I mean, everybody in that family is pretty much nice.
Like, oh yes,
pretty much everybody. You know, we all have our days, but for the most part, everybody was nice, cared about you. Maybe didn't even know you. Was always saying, "Hey, how's it going?" You know, like it. You know, and I just remember like hanging out with Brandon and like, bro, like your dad is amazing here with all these other kids. So when he's alone with you guys, that must be absolutely amazing. You know, like, I mean, the talent that dude possessed was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you saw him in a show, and I mean, I unfortunately didn't really get to see a whole lot of, I saw like some clips of him in shows and stuff like that. And it's like, bro,
I'll tell you a quick audition story that H shared with me, and I don't know if this is true. I believe it's true, because having worked with him as much as I did, I wouldn't put just about anything past this guy. But I remember him telling me that when you go to audition for a show, you've got to stand out. You're going to have 10 to 20 people auditioning alongside of you that are going for the same dang part. And if you don't do something to differentiate yourself, you're not going to get it. And he went on to tell me a story about auditioning, him auditioning for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest somewhere. And not the one up at Ohlone. And no, he had gotten called back for the part, the lead part of, was it McMurphy?
McMurphy.
Yeah. And basically the director told all of the guys that were called back for McMurphy after they did some reading sides that he wanted them to improv. He said, basically all of you take a section of the stage and improv as if you're the character and you're hanging out in the asylum. What are you doing? Okay. And H said he stood there for a couple minutes trying to figure out what he was going to do. And then he really got into the mind of McMurphy and he turned around, put his back to the director and proceeded to pee on the stage. And he, needless to say, ended up getting the part. I don't know how much of it was because of that boldness.
But see, you know what? See, there's a part of me that absolutely, like, there's a part of me that goes, what? And then a part of me goes, yeah, that
tracks.
That could have happened. That could have happened.
Yeah. And like I said, he told me this. I have to believe it was true. And like I said, knowing the man, it's like, yeah, I could see you doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, there are so many pearls of wisdom that still to this day I use. You know, I've gone on to direct myself, you know, and I don't think I could ever come anywhere close to the caliber that he was, but I always tried to do my best and give 1,000% and be as involved in every aspect of the show as I could be, because I feel like, especially as a director, if you are just 100% letting your lighting designer do whatever, you're going to get a show that's lit, but it might not be to your vision. You know, and I remember, you know, you and I, we worked on West Side Story together for stage one back in 2014. And, you know, I remember the lighting designer that I had for that show, good guy named John. But I remember I had to meet with him and I had to sit down and really explain what I wanted, because his idea for the show was very different from my idea. And, you know, maybe if I wasn't a lighting designer at heart as well, I wouldn't have cared as much.
Right.
But I did. Same thing from a set perspective. You know, I remember working with the set designer and saying, this is what I want. This is what I need to see. These are the moving pieces. These are whatever. And I remember, again, it was my vision was not theirs. But that's the thing. If you have a director that has a vision and is really hungry, that wants to flesh everything out, you can have a really good show. And you've seen it, and I've seen it, where, you know, you work with a director who just kind of only does the stage direction. That's all they do. That's the only thing they focus on. And bless you. And, you know, it could be an amazing show. Hopefully the people in those different positions, your prop master or mistress, right, your costumer, hopefully these people are all amazing and you can still get an amazing show. But if there is no unified vision, it can get really clunky. I remember seeing a production of Mary Poppins up here in Northern Nevada. And that's exactly what happened, is you had a director who all they really did was the stage direction. The choreography didn't match with the feel of the show. The sets didn't really match with the feel of the show. The costumes didn't really match. And so I think that's another big takeaway that I took from H, was that there needs to be a unified feel. You don't have to be, you know, 100% dived in to all aspects, but you've got to at least be, you know, dialed in, knowing what's going on and checking in, you know,
making sure that everybody knows what you are looking for.
You know, one of the things that I still say to this day is inspect what you expect. And that is something that I really think came from working with him, is that, you know, you can say, hey, I need you to do this, or this is what I want this to look like. But if you don't actually follow through to make sure that's what actually happened, then you might not get what you're looking for. Couple quick call outs from Steven. Not to mention directing teens and sometimes kids, you need to be hands-on and explain the vision. Although I didn't always understand it through my own shortcomings, he always explained his vision of the show. And that's so funny. Yeah, it's I don't know. I feel like, you know, we're 3/4 of the way through this episode already. And I feel like there's still so much more I want to say and could say, you know, tagging back to something you talked about earlier with the football, you know, calling the games. I got to work with H my senior year on calling the games. I was his spotter my senior year. And the main reason I was working with him was because he decided that that was going to be his last year. He wanted to move on and focus on other things. And I think he wanted to be more of a fan, and I think he was just tired. I mean, he'd been
doing it forever,
as long as I can remember, even back before I was in high school. And so it's an interesting fact that while you and I have known each other for as long as we had this unique experience with him. But not at the same time. I wasn't involved when you were doing it, and you weren't involved when I was doing it. And so it's kind of fun to share these types of stories, because sometimes you find out things that you're like, wow, I didn't realize there was that. You know, I think for me, I'll touch on a little bit of H's retirement. And, you know, I remember when it was announced that he was retiring, and it was one of those where it was like, he deserves it, but man, that program's going to suffer. Because, you know, Barb and him, they were a team, you know, they didn't always see eye to eye by no means. They very often were at each other's throats.
I think they would decide on the shows they were going to do. They knew who was going to direct said shows. But then after that, it was kind of like, yeah, it was this bumping heads, but there was always purpose behind those heads butting. It was stuff that, you know, they didn't let us in on, really, for the most part. I mean, sometimes it'd be, you know,
you could see it though. Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, you knew, like, they were at odds at certain points in time, but you could tell they're like I've said before, their main objective was putting out a quality show.
Yes.
And I know while I was there, quality. While you were there, quality. After that, meh.
There was still some quality after we were gone. I mean, you know, obviously you and I being gone really went from, you know, a show that could be 100% to maybe it could max out at like 80, but still, that's good. That's good. No offense, Steven. But yeah, I remember thinking, because Barb had already retired and she was already gone when H was retiring, and Brandon was there. And so that was good, but it was like H retiring to me was, I thought, going to cripple the program. Yeah, Brandon being there and being involved was very good, but I think Brandon always had bigger visions, and he should. I think if that man wanted to, he easily could have and should have been in Hollywood and doing movies and television. You know, he still to this day, and even knowing professional actors, he's still to me one of the most talented individuals I've ever had the opportunity to meet and work with. But
yeah, absolutely.
You know, and sadly enough, you know, after H retired and then not long thereafter, Brandon left, the program did go very downhill.
Like Debbie says, it's that they took having two people and then they put in the hands of one, and it was, yeah. it's bound to fail at that point. When you had, and especially when you had two people who were so passionate about theater, like Barb and H were, like literally I contribute me even getting into theater. I contribute that to Barb. H made me love it.
Yeah. The first show I got actually cast in high school was a Barb show. And so, you know, I had gone, you know, I'd done Wizard of Oz in the summer between eighth and ninth grade, and I did Bye Bye Birdie at the end of my sophomore year. So I had gone pretty much 2 years
Only black guy, Sweet Apple, Ohio.
Yes. Yes, you were. I had basically gone 2 years without doing a show, and I was kind of like, okay, maybe theater isn't my thing, because I had auditioned for, you know, I had auditioned for that Godspell, didn't get in. I had auditioned for The Hostage, didn't get in. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe I shouldn't do theater. Maybe I should just do, or the acting side, maybe I should just do the tech side, because I think I did a pretty good job on The Hostage with H. And I did work on the tech side for Bye Bye Birdie as well as being in it. But, you know, definitely I would agree with you that, you know, Barb gave me the opportunity in high school to continue on stage. But I think, you know, H gave me the opportunity to go from enjoying being on stage to enjoying the process of theater overall. Yeah. And you know, Stephen calls out an honorable mention to H's loving wife, Marilee, and her awesome costumes. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Marilee is amazing. You know, unfortunately,
you know, I remember when, I don't remember what it was. I think it might've been H's retirement celebration that we had at the school, I believe. But I had no idea that woman could sing.
Mm.
I had zero clue. Zero. I was like, wait, what? Like, I was like, wait, where'd this come from? Like, I never really met her. I saw her at, you know, all the shows and stuff like that. But I was like, wait, what? You can, huh? But so, it's like, oh. Family's full of surprises, I see.
Yeah, that whole family, when you think about it, really, you know, all five, you know, the parents, Marilee and Steve and the three kids and, you know, their spouses and likely now their grandkids. And, you know, for those that don't know, the Harringtons did end up moving to Colorado, back to where H was from. And they opened their own theater group, Harrington, I think it's Harrington Arts Alliance or something along those lines. And I probably should actually get that right, but I won't right now. And they went on to create this nonprofit, and they now own, you know, the company owns the building that they work in. And, you know, I've seen a lot of the videos or photos that they post, and,
they retook the picture. They retook like one of the first pictures that they took. They recreated it recently. Wow, that's crazy. How in just you know, it's, I think it was like a 10-year anniversary or something like that, and it was just like just the change that had happened. It was just like, man, that's nuts.
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing thing to think that. This man, you know, touched obviously hundreds of thousands of kids' lives in his time as a teacher. But now through his family, they're continuing to do that. And so, you know, it it really carries on. And, you know, you can see the grandkids are all involved in these shows that they're doing. And I would expect to see that, you know, this just becomes a legacy of H to carry on through the generations. And it, again, you know, as I said about Brandon, you know, easily could have and should have, you know, been in Hollywood and movies and TVs. H himself, I think the same thing, you know, obviously worked with him primarily as a director, producer, lighting designer, but seeing the man act as well, you know, working with him on sketches.
His set designs were, cuckoo.
And again, as an actor, speaking of cuckoo, when he, you know, I remember that's the one time I got to see him really all out as an actor in a full-on production was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest up at Ohlone. And it was just amazing seeing him in that, knowing him and seeing how well, I felt like easily, you know, him in that role was Tony worthy almost, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it is Harrington Arts Alliance, HAA. So cool. So needless to say, I don't know how many of the Harrington clan will hear this or see this, but you know, I think I can speak for both of us that we love H. We love the Harrington family. We are thankful, I think, for the direction that our lives have gone, which is due in huge part to Steve.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I'll kick it to you for any closing thoughts.
Nah, man, I'm actually just kind of thinking about everything. I'm starting to tear up a little bit over here because, you know, I like I said, there's three people that I can contribute what I do now, like theater, the love for theater that I have. He's number two. Absolutely. There are theater teachers and I've worked with a lot of theater teachers over, you know, the past number of decades just because of, you know, the high school theater festival. So I was really involved in getting to know the teachers, the schools and everything else, but they were all passionate about what they did. Don't get me wrong. They loved theater. They loved their kids. They loved putting on good shows, but there is nobody like H. There will never be anybody like H. That man was one in a million. And I guarantee you, if there are shows that are going on in heaven right now, that man is involved in every aspect. Because I don't know how that dude slept, but I don't know how you would be able to sleep with so many ideas going through your head. Cause yeah. I mean, like I said, during a show, he would be involved in lighting, designing, lighting design, set design, building, doing everything. Everything that a director shouldn't really have to do. He was like, nah, I'm gonna go ahead and at least get my hands in it. He'll hand it over to people and make sure, you know, what he needs to get done gets done. But there was nobody that was as involved. And so, thank you. That's all I can really say. It's just, I'm glad to have been able to experience that man, in just the small way that I did. You know, 3 years about four years of just caring and truly loving, and instilling the love of theater in so many. And, yeah, I'll always remember that, man.
Yeah, I think you said it extremely well. You know, I come back to the song from Hamilton. I don't know what the song's called, but, you know, where they're talking about, why do you write like you're running out of time? You know, he's nonstop. And
yeah, that's
that was H. You know, and I agree with you. I've got to say thank you. Thank you for the love. Thank you for the passion. Thank you for the education, the training. I wish in some small way that, you know, what you gave to us in some small way, we hopefully gave to you.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think one final thing. I mean, if you had the chance to work with this dude and didn't catch some sort of just crazy energy, your soul was turned off.
Yeah.
like if you did not get some sort of, I mean, his energy, his passion, it was absolutely infectious. And if you did not catch that, oh my, if you didn't catch it, you missed out. And if you did, you absolutely 100% know what I'm talking about. You felt that passion, you felt that love, you saw it, you damn near could taste it. So, I mean, like it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal training. It was phenomenal knowledge from a phenomenal man. So we miss you, man.
Yep.
Truly, truly. The world lost a special dude. Lost a special dude. But like you said, his family is carrying on that legacy 100.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that's a great way to close out the show. Steven's going to rock some cargo shorts this week. I think that's a good idea.
Yes, sir.
You've got some tie-dye. Throw that on. But I think this is a good way to wrap the show. And so for the Hair Dog and for Smokey, it's been fun. And
this one's been real fun.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you. We'll see you next week. And hope
if
you
we get the, and yeah, if we get that, if we get that web information for the celebration tomorrow, we'll make sure to post that for sure.
Yes. Be on the lookout for a post for the link to the live stream. So hopefully we'll have that up today or tomorrow. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Now.